Okay, I think most people are in. I'm not sure of what Bianca was telling you, but did she tell you the news that we've decided to extend the retreat for 7 more days? And you all have to unpack your bags and take them out of your car. It would be very interesting if you could do that, wouldn't it? But nevertheless, we always plan the future. So many people probably packed their bags last night. Even though they're not going for quite a few more hours. It's really an interesting attitude which we have. We spend so much time preparing for the future, we don't spend time enjoying the present moment. And that's why early on in this retreat I asked you to please always pay lots of attention to the in-between moments of your life. Because much of your time, you've left a place, you haven't got to the next place, and you're in between things. You may even in meditation, you may have started a meditation, you haven't got to the breath yet, you're in between things. And most of life is in between. In fact, you might say that the definition of life is that space in between birth and death. And reflecting and appreciating and valuing that which is in between is where we get so much insight into our life. Because a lot of times, you know, you came here and now you're going again. And there's very little of our lives are we actually here. We're always going off into some other place. We're always on the move. You can see that's the nature of our mind as well. When our body's on the move, when our life is on the move, always thinking about the next job, the next assignment, the next thing to do. You can see why our mind is restless too. Because it doesn't know how to appreciate the in-between moments of life. So, the retreat hasn't ended yet. You're in between this morning and the time your retreat finishes. So please value all these moments. They're really, really important. And if you understand and appreciate the in-between moments of life, then retreat doesn't finish until you get in the car and drive out the gate. You get much more of life. You don't die until that last moment when the doctor kicks you and you don't respond. You don't waste so many moments of life. So please notice all the in-between moments of life which we waste. And stop wasting them, because they're far, far too precious. No, but the retreat is coming to an end now. I know that Ajahn Chah always used to say he loved endings much more than beginnings. Because beginnings means lots and lots of work to do. Endings means at last you can relax. But you've got to end it properly. And to end something properly, we must end it leaving nothing lingering behind. As if we can walk along that beach. You know, just that place on the beach between the ocean and the sort of the dry sand. So we have our footstep, and then the wave comes in, washes it all away. So we leave no traces. To me, that's a very beautiful simile of how we should live our life. We make a step, and then the wave comes and washes it away. Leaving no trace. We are like invisible. The past vanishes. And all we have is a step happening right now. So please, don't linger. In between moments, that's where we stay. We don't linger in the past. Nor do we start making all these fantasy castles in the future. I mentioned earlier that one of the great sayings of the Buddha is, whatever you expect it to be, it will always be something else. And I hopefully that this retreat was not what you expected. If it was, then it's been a failure. It's just teaching you that when it's not what you expected, what it teaches us is not to expect anything, not to plan too much, and just to allow the future to unfold, rather than always trying to fold it in a particular way. So we become more at peace with life and more able to adapt as situations change. So what you learn in this retreat is not just learning how to meditate, it's learning about life. I've often noticed that the meditation which you learn here is just a reflection of the life which you live outside. You know, the ability to forgive the pain of the past. If you're going to keep anything, to keep the beautiful memories from the past. But it's even better to keep nothing and just enjoy the present moment. To be able to learn how to be content with little, realizing you don't need all that much in life to be happy and content. In this retreat, there was no TVs, there's no movies. At least I hope there wasn't any TVs or movies. You know, you can live so simply. You know, in your nice little room, you had a shower, you had a nice bed, a nice place where you can make yourself a cup of tea. What more do you need, you know, to live quite peacefully? Sometimes you see all these incredible big mansions, which they have in a city like Perth. And often I think, gee, well, what a person doing, spending so much money on such a big house. Number one, it's so hard to clean. It takes hours and hours and hours and hours just to clean it. And someone sent me a story some months ago about a woman in UK who won, I think it was £41 million on the lotto. You may have seen that, Chandra. I don't know if maybe you sent it to me, I don't know, because she lives in England. She won £41 million in the lotto, bought her family this big mansion, and 12 months later sold the mansion at a great loss. And the reason she sold the mansion was that it was so huge, she could never find her husband or her children. They were in some room in the house which was so huge that she could never find them. And the caption in this article in the newspaper was, "Honey, I can't find the kids." Because that's what happens in such a huge house, you can't find each other. You know, one person lives in one part of the house, another in another part of the house, so we never meet each other. And I remember growing up in a small council flat in London. It was so small, you could fit about, I don't know, maybe about 8 or 9 of them in this room. But because it was very small, it meant there was always bumping into my brother, my mother, my father, which meant we had a family. You know, we fought, we learned to get on together. We couldn't hide from each other. So we learned how to love and get on because we had to, because it was small. And sometimes that type of simplicity, where we can learn how to have less of material things, but more of life, is a very, very beautiful thing which we learn here. You know, you learn to be able to, you know, live together in peace and harmony because we didn't speak to each other. I never forget this couple here. It was an Australian man who was married to a Thai girl. He couldn't speak any Thai, she couldn't speak any English. And they were so happy together. They couldn't understand what the other one was saying. That's why they had such a great time together. So it's wonderful to have silence. And as a few people have said in the interviews, that just keeping silence, and we haven't been totally silent, you know, you've been talking about this and talking about that, but it's been mostly silent. And you find that even in silence, you can have this beautiful sense of warmth and camaraderie, you know, of bonding, as somebody said, the bonding of silence. You don't need to speak, you know, to show how much you care for one another. Just a little smile, just, you know, just getting out of the way, opening the door for somebody. That's enough to create a beautiful sense of bonding and camaraderie. So what this actually teaches you in this retreat is we do talk too much in life. And it'd be wonderful if we talk less, smile more, and feel more. It's very, very important. Because what happens when one is silent, one thing I never mentioned during the retreat, when one doesn't talk, one listens more. And that's one of the reasons why we can get a sense of bonding and camaraderie. Because you know, when we're talking, we're just listening to our own words. We're not listening to other people at all. We're not being sensitive to the people around us. We're just talking. So when we're silent, we have more space in our brain to see, to hear, to feel, and understand what's going on around us. So silence makes us more sensitive. And that sensitivity means that we can be much more caring towards one another. So be careful in the house or in the office. Too much talking means too little listening. I often tell the story that once, many years ago, I was over the road in the monastery, and I just passed the kitchen about a quarter of an hour before the meal. And I saw that day there were Thai people cooking the lunch. There was about 6 or 7 Thai girls in there cooking. And as I looked through the window, I couldn't believe my eyes. Each one of those girls was talking at the same time. There were 7 girls in the kitchen and 7 were talking. And I wondered, who's left to do the listening? There was no one left to do the listening. They were all talking. What a waste of time that talking was. So it's great to be quiet and to listen. Because when we listen, even though with noble silence, we can not only listen with our ears, we can listen with our mind as well. So instead of all that inner talking, that thinking, we can listen with our mind. And that's where we get the great insights. You know, one of the great insights we get when we're quiet, when we get into some silence, is how useless is all this talking. So much of it is a waste of time. That's with the exception of my talks, of course. So much talking is a waste of time. So we can do much better just by being silent more, listening more, feeling more, and thereby becoming wiser human beings in this life. Another idea, like to listen, to listen to other people, and especially those of you who do have relationships. To listen to your partner. I call this like total listening. When he or she is speaking and you're perfectly quiet, like you're meditating inside. So you pick up everything which they're saying, all the nuances, all the body language, everything. So you really do read between the lines, as they say. And you do really pick up so much more if you're silent when the other person's talking. But not only that, you learn how to be silent in life. So when life or truth is talking to you, you can listen to her. It's all the truth. It's not what comes from the words of the mouth of a monk. Now the greatest dharma is just living in this life. Getting up in the morning, just feeling the wind on your face, seeing the stars at night time. Just all the things which we experience during this retreat. In silence. It's much more dharma there than any of these talks. And that's where you see that this is life. And it just rolls on and we can't control it. And you can't control the wind. In fact, you don't know where the wind comes from. You don't know where it goes. All you ever know is when the wind is passing you in the present moment. That's why the wind is a beautiful thing to contemplate. Just like you, where did you come from? I don't know. Where are you going to? Who can tell? But here I am right now, just like the wind. And so, learning from nature like that, looking at the forest and all the trees, you notice all the dead trees out there? Have you ever seen a perfect tree in the forest, outside? I've never yet seen a perfect tree in my life. There's never a tree which is perfectly straight, with all the branches nicely arranged, with no broken twigs, with no little marks on the trunk. All the trees have defects, just like each one of you. And me too. And that's what makes the forest beautiful. If all the trees were perfectly straight and in line, we know that was planted by the government. In real life, in nature, things are all over the place, just like you and your mind. And that's what makes it beautiful. So you don't need to train everything to be just so. The point of enlightenment is realizing that this is your nature, making peace with it, leaving it alone, letting it be. And that way that everything becomes still. It's not the world which is a problem. It's the way we react to the world. It's not you who's a problem. It's the way you react to you. That's the problem. So after a while we learn to make peace with things. To be kind, make peace, and be gentle. And you can do that with life, you can do that with your duties, you can do that with your body, you can do that with your mind. And that creates huge amounts of peace, wisdom, and happiness in your life. And that's what we hopefully we taught here. So you know the purpose of this retreat was not to get you into jhanas or get you enlightened, but to teach you how to get into jhanas and how to get enlightened. That was the purpose of this retreat, to teach you the method, the path. The goals, they will come by themselves in due course. As long as you've got the path clearly in mind, you know, so how you live your life, how you meditate, not what you meditate on, not what you achieve, but how you do these things. Once you know the path, then of course, the goal eventually comes. But the path, the path, the path, that's what I want to teach you. So as long as you know about letting go, making peace, being happy, being kind, putting joy into your life, putting the joy into the sadhus and everything else you do in life, then you've got the message of this retreat. And it's very important to learn. One of the stories which I like to bring up at this time was the story of the professor and the old sailor. I don't know if I've done this for a while yet. This was a story from many decades ago when, if you did come from Slovakia or England or from Canada or wherever you've come from for this retreat, you would not come in aircraft, you would come on these big boats. It would take many, many days, sometimes weeks at sea to go from one place to another. And there was one of these passenger liners, and one of the passengers on it was this professor who was going from one country to another to give a series of lectures at the university. On the first night at sea, after dinner, he went out on deck just to have some exercise. And as he was walking on the deck, he saw this old sailor looking up at the stars. It was a beautiful clear night. So he decided to have a conversation with this old sailor. So he went up beside him and said, "Old man, how long have you been at sea?" He said, "Oh, ever since I was a young man, maybe 13 or 14, I've been at sea. I've been sailing these seas for most of my life, 60 years or more." "Wow," said the professor. "In all these years at sea, looking up at the stars, you must know so much about astronomy. And that's one of my hobbies. I like astronomy. You must know all these constellations and just how they turn around as the earth moves. You must be an expert on astronomy." And the sailor said, "Actually, I don't know anything about astronomy. I don't even know how to spell the word." "What you mean you've never bothered to look at a book to learn about the heavens above you and all these wonderful stars?" He said, "Nope." And the professor was quite disgusted. "You stupid old man. Now, all those years and you wasted your life. You stupid old man." And he just walked away in disgust. The second night at sea, it was a very, very good dinner. So the professor was in a good mood. And when he saw the sailor looking into the oceans, he thought he'd give the old sailor a second chance. So he sidled up next to him and said, "Now, old man, you've sailed these waters for so many years. You must know all about marine science, about all the animals which swim in the waters beneath you, about the currents and everything else to do with the oceans, because you've been sailing on them all your life." And the old sailor said, "I don't know anything about marine science. What is it?" "What, you stupid old man, all these years at sea, you never bothered to learn about the water on which you lived most of your life?" "Nope." "You stupid old man. What a waste of a life. What a waste of a life." The third night at sea, it was such an incredibly good meal and such a wonderful balmy evening. But when the professor... "It's okay, this is the last one." When the professor went on the deck and he saw the old man just enjoying the evening breeze, he went up beside him one more time and he said, "Look, I'm sorry what I said to you the last couple of nights. You know, I realize, obviously, maybe you might not know about astronomy and marine science, but as a sailor, the one thing you have to know is about the weather. He said, actually, that's my area. I'm a professor of meteorology. I'm going to give a series of lectures in this university about the weather. Maybe we can compare notes. Because, you know, this weather drives your ship. And if there's a storm, it sinks your ship. So you must know a lot about the weather. Let's compare notes about meteorology. And the old sailor said, sir, I don't know anything about meteorology. I know nothing about the weather, except that the rain is wet. What? Said the professor. All these years at sea and you've never learnt about the weather which drives your ship, nor about the waters underneath you or the skies above you? Nope, said the sailor. You stupid old man. You idiotic man. You moron of a sailor. What a waste of a life. Ugh. And he went away in utter disgust, this time vowing never to talk to the stupid old sailor again. The fourth night at sea, the professor never had any dinner because it was one of these rough nights on the ocean. And the professor, you know, he suffered from seasickness, especially if he had any dinner inside of him, he'd throw it up. So he stayed in his cabin rather than eating. And as the night wore on, the storm grew worse. The boat started to rock backwards and forwards, more and more, crashing into the waves until suddenly there was a bang! Something really crashed. And the professor was scared. And then he heard all these people running outside his cabin door. And in terrible alarm, he opened the cabin door. And who happened to be running right outside but the old sailor? And the old sailor stopped and turned to the professor and said to the professor, Professor, in all your years, have you ever studied swimming? Have you ever learned how to swim? And the professor said, actually, no. And you know what's coming next. And the old sailor said, you stupid old professor, you idiot professor, you moron of a professor, what a waste of a life. The ship's sinking. And the moral of that story is, if you're a sailor, it doesn't really matter so much. You don't understand astronomy or marine science or even the weather. But the thing you have to understand is how to swim. Just like in life. You know, you may be a professor of philosophy. You may be an expert in electrics. You may be a great accountant or doctor. But the most important thing in life is learn how to swim. How to keep your head above water in the difficulties and problems of your life. To understand suffering and how to let go of it. That's the most important thing in life. To learn how to swim. So that's what I've been teaching you here. So hopefully that when your ship sinks, which it does many times during your life, you can keep your head above water and don't go down with the ship. When the relationship goes down, you keep afloat. When you lose all your money, you keep afloat. When you get your cancers, you keep afloat. Learning how to swim in the difficult situations of life. And that's hopefully what you've learned here. But of course that learning continues on and you can't always be on retreats. So you will be going home and practicing your meditation at home. And people often ask, when I get home, how long should I meditate just to keep it up? And the answer is, see if you can meditate as many minutes of the day as you eat. Very nice, because I say that because you can always find time to eat. So you should always find time to meditate. That's minimum, okay? That's not maximum. Minimum. And the reason I say that also is because meditation is food for the heart. And that's what happens, you know, if you don't meditate for one day. If I don't meditate because I'm busy and all something happens. And I feel that, you know, you're not sort of balanced. It's like you haven't had a meal that day, you feel weak. But I'm not talking about physical weak, I'm talking about spiritually, mentally weak, if you haven't meditated that day. So that's why it's really important to keep it up. You don't make as much progress as you do during a retreat, because a retreat, everything is set up for you. And you make great progress, but at least you keep the pot warm. So that when you come on a retreat, you're not starting with a cold pot. It's warm, and you can just get it to the boil pretty quickly and make some more progress. So it's great to be able to do that. And you know, it doesn't cost any money to meditate. It's really, really cheap. So it's a great way of saving money. So instead of going out, you can actually meditate instead. And it's a great way of also saving money with your food as well, entertainment, because it's true that when you meditate, the food tastes more delicious. So have you ever actually, have you noticed that during this retreat, how delicious the food is? It's not the cooks. I'm sorry, Bianca and all the other cooks, it's not you. It is your meditation makes it taste more beautiful. So when you meditate at home, oh, you know, your wife or your husband's cooking is so much more delicious. So if you're doing the dinner that evening, tell your partner to meditate first of all. You spent all that hours cooking, so they should appreciate it by meditating first of all. And if you go out for dinner one evening, please make sure you meditate before you go to dinner. If you're paying all that money for the food, you want to get your money's worth. And if you do go out for dinner with somebody, please tell them to shut up. Because how can you taste the food and be talking with them at the same time? That's actually ridiculous. You know, in restaurants, when people are sitting down, they're talking with each other while they're eating. They might as well be going to like the McDonald's or junk food, because they don't know what they're putting in their mouth. They're just not paying attention to the conversations. So if you go to expensive restaurant in particular, you go to expensive restaurant, whoever's sitting next to you says, shut up, I paid a lot of money for this meal. I want to get as much taste as I possibly can for it. Well, why not? So that's actually why we eat in silence. Isn't it beautiful to eat in silence? You know, because as a monk, we always eat in silence. There's a few times when, you know, I've been with somebody and they've been talking when they're eating. I just find it very, very disturbing. You can't enjoy your food. And because you can't enjoy your food, it means that the saliva, the bile, all this other stuff which comes out to digest it, doesn't come out. Because it doesn't come out because you're not paying attention to it, that means it doesn't get digested. And that means you don't have a good digestion. So because you don't have a good digestion, basically the food goes straight through you. It's wasted. That's my problem, because I'm so mindful when I eat. I digest every part of the food. And that's why, you know, that hardly anything comes out, it all stays inside. That's my problem. I'm just too mindful. I've got all these excuses. My main excuse is I don't worry enough, because people say when you worry a lot, when you have a lot of anxiety, you lose weight. So please, make me more anxious. I need to lose weight. I've got to worry about something. What can I worry about? Can you make me worry about something? No, because we're nice and peaceful. Our metabolism goes down. So, anyway, that's what we learn on these retreats. And when you go home, please practice it. I did mention in passing that in order to help carry on your meditation practice at home, find a little space in the corner of the house, in the cupboard, under the stairs, somewhere where you can have a little meditation room. Say, cupboard under the stairs, because there's a couple here did that. This, years ago I mentioned this to them. And under the stairs, they cleaned out their cupboard. That's a little shrine room, a meditation hall, because when you sit down, it doesn't need to be too high. Under the stairs is fine. And they would meditate there, you know, every morning and other times when they really wanted to. And they told me this great story that they had two kids, like a little girl, maybe five, a boy about six or seven. And, you know, in the garden, they have boys and girls, and brothers and sisters being brothers and sisters. They had an argument, and the elder brother hit the girl. And she was, not that it hurt, just emotionally, it was devastating. You know, her brother hit her. And what she did, she ran into the house, crying, under the stairs, and sat in the meditation cushion. And the mother was just so impressed. She said she never went in that room before, but somehow or other, she realized that in that little room, the meditation room, was a place of peace and safety where she could heal her emotional hurt. And so she sat there as an automatic. She said, what an amazing thing that was. They realized that that was a place to go when you're in pain. And that's the benefit of such a place. Because you meditate in there and keep it peaceful and quiet, day in, day out, it does create an atmosphere, a state of peace, a sort of a vibe of stillness and comfort and safety. So not only you can go there whenever you're stressed out or upset emotionally, but so can your children. Even a pack of the dogs like sleeping there as well, because they like to have a bit of peace and quiet too. So it's great to have those places in your house. If you haven't got a cupboard under the stairs, just a corner of your bedroom. Make that your little sacred shrine. But the most important thing is to make sure that's all you use that place for. You don't do anything else there. You don't, you know, listen to music or take your iPhone there and just call up people. No, it's just use it for quiet, for peace. So don't keep it sacred for the peace. And if you do that, it makes it much easier to meditate. So those are just some little advice on just how we can use the time after this retreat is finished. And you know this retreat centre is going to be here for many years yet. So you can always come again. None of you has got blacklisted. I've been looking at you and writing down, yes, yes, maybe this person will never again not. None of you are blacklisted. So you can always come again. But I'm not sure what Bianca said. But did she talk about to do the self-retreats as well? Okay, because that's a very nice possibility here. You know that the organized retreats, this is like an organized retreat for 9 days where we take up all the rooms, that after the organized retreats, you know, until the next organized retreat, when's the next organized retreat? Is that the weekend one in March? It's mid-February. Okay. In mid-February there is like a weekend retreat, but between those times people can come and stay and do what's called self-retreat. So on a self-retreat it means, you know, you come here and there is breakfast stuff available, so you make your own breakfast in that little kitchenette, and for lunchtime you just walk over to the monastery over the road. There's always enough food there, you know, to feed a whole army. Sometimes even what goes in my bowl is enough to feed an army. But there's plenty of food over there. So you go over there and get some food and then you walk back here. And all the time is for yourself. So there's no schedule. The rooms are open. This place is open over here. And you have your tea and stuff in the evening. So it's basically looking after yourself. And you don't really need a teacher, because there are so many talks which are recorded, you know, on your sort of iPod and iPad and something else's. So there's so much stuff there that you can have plenty of instruction, because what most people need is just the opportunity, the place, the peace and quiet to be able to meditate. So that's what you do. Totally up to your own resources. Get up whenever you want, go to bed whenever you want. And thereby just have a nice quiet time. Usually, if it's a self-retreat, it has to be, at least 3 or 4 days. Because sometimes people have come just for 1 day and it's just like you can't really get into it. And even just for a weekend, that's not really correct, because that's just a weekender, like a little holiday. And it's not really what this place is for. So it's, you know, what was the minimum, sir?
It's 7 days.
7 days, yeah. 7 days is good to do a self-retreat. Unless it's anything less, you have to twist our arm. So that's actually for those self-retreats. I just like on this retreat, you know, we do ask for the $25 a day just to cover the costs for the self-retreats as well. But, you know, the food is all over there, so you've got plenty of food over there. So that's a nice way of also making use of this place during the sort of times when there's not a retreat. So you can always do some meditation by yourself. All you need to do is, once you've done a retreat, an organized retreat with us, then basically you got permission to do a self-retreat and just, so you call up Daniel and just make arrangements. That's okay? Very, very good. Okay, so that's basically it so far. So the retreat hasn't ended. As I said, many people have got their best meditations after the final talk, but before you leave. Because it's another couple of hours until lunch. And when are you supposed to be doing all your duties and cleaning up? Right now. Now is the only time. So you can do those duties, and if you finish them, just go and do some meditation. Have a nice, peaceful time. So are there any questions about the retreat? We're going to be doing the loving-kindness meditation this afternoon. What's the program for this afternoon? Does anyone know?
Talk. You're giving a talk at
2 o'clock. I am I? Okay. Thanks for telling me. I made a meditation. Okay. So in other words, we come back and that means we finish about 3 o'clock. That's the final chanting to finish up. Great, yes?
For the self-retreat, they can email the bookings at John O'Grove.
Okay, email, yeah. Email bookings at John O'Grove. Very, very good. So any questions anybody has? Because, you know, we haven't got the box anymore. Or the basket. If anyone wants to say, so yes, go on.
So you don't have to go to the toilet every day. You said all of what you eat is all digestive.
All digestive. Yes. But that's all the stuff which is food. But mixed up with my food is also the stuff which comes out afterwards. You can't say that urine or feces is food. So that's one of the, for those of you who really get off on your food too much, and you get too much greed, that's a contemplation you can do. You look at that nice, you know, plate of curry or whatever, lasagna or whatever, and in there somewhere is, you know, the feces. It is. I mean, it doesn't come from nowhere. It's in there. Somewhere hidden in there, somewhere, you know, under the curry, under the rice. Because you put it in, and the food is what you keep, and that comes out. So it's there somewhere. It's in the plate. So the next time you want to sort of lose some weight, and just look at that. Next time you look at your food, where is it? Somewhere there. I know it's there somewhere. Thank you very much. So, yeah, I just eat the food part. The other stuff, you know, just passes through me. Very good. Any other questions? Yeah, go on.
Should we try and restrain ourselves?
Restrain. It's restrain what's going to be harmful to you. So don't restrain everything, because sometimes people restrain so much, they have no joy in their life. There was this very famous Zen monastery in Japan, a Heiji monastery. That's where Dogen, that's the monastery Dogen started. Very austere. And so there you see, it's just, they clean the snow off the roof, and they bathe in this water, which is, you know, minus something, well, not minus, but it's just, you know, just on freezing. And they work very hard. That's the monastery where they sit there, and if they bend a little bit, they get whacked on the back. Very, very strict monastery. But the one thing which isn't strict is the food. Their rule is to make sure the food is delicious. When I first heard that, I thought that was not sort of in keeping with the other ethos of the monastery, being ascetic. They said, no, the food must be delicious. And when they explained why, was they say, if it's not delicious, the monks have indigestion. Because the purpose of the taste of the food is, again, so that the saliva, the bile, all this other stuff is secreted. If it's not delicious, it doesn't come out. And that's why people get indigestion. The juices don't come out. And that was actually reinforced. There was one monk, he had some digestive problems. And so he went to the hospital and they gave him a barium meal, you know, this radioactive stuff, so they could x-ray him and find out how it goes through his system. But they made a big mistake of booking his appointment for about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He was a monk. So because he'd only eaten in the morning time, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the whole digestive system was shut down. It was dormant. It wasn't used to doing anything. It was resting. So he sat down there, and they were waiting and waiting and waiting. Nothing was happening. The barium was just sitting there. And so there was one of the nurses there was very smart. He said, "Think of your favorite food." And that's what he did, think of his favorite food, and the whole thing started moving through his system. And that was actually very fascinating to know that. Only a monk could have to do that with, because, you know, you eat all the time, so, you know, your digestive system would always be sort of operating. But, you know, he'd been trained his digestive system to actually to shut down in the afternoon. But thinking about his favorite food got things churning and moving. If you think of the food you don't like, nothing would happen. So that's it's true. This is one of the reasons why that they said the food has to be delicious. And even the Buddha sort of allowed that for monks. He said, "You know, even I eat very delicious food, and we don't stop that." So indulging in delicious food, fine, because it actually is good for your health. Now, I don't go overboard, but as long as it's tasty. And but there's other things we can restrain with, like, you know, watching movies. Because look, you know, the movies are all the same. You know, it's always girl meets boy. The other type of movie is boy meets girl. Or boy meets boy. And there's always some violence in there. You know, there's somebody's trying to blow up the world, or there's, you know, there's a war, or some politician is corrupt. And it's the same old stories. It's for years, it's always been the same. And then in the end, you know, the bad guy gets it. And the girl and the boy, they meet together and live happily ever after. It's exactly the same plot, all the time. So you know what's going to happen. I was on one flight going to, I forget where, and, you know, they had the, didn't take the headphones, but, you know, you had the movie came down, and it was Armageddon, this movie Armageddon. And I was just watching the screen without, you know, the headphones, so there was no dialogue and no music. And it was the funniest silent movie I've ever seen. You should try that one day. Get a movie and just turn the sound off and just watch the... I remember this scene. I think they had these two spacecraft and they were supposed to land on an asteroid which is gonna sort of destroy the Earth, okay? So, yeah, you knew what was going to happen in the end. You know, it would just miss, just at the very last minute. Of course you could predict, that was easy. But one of the crafts, it hit the asteroid, and it smashed into it, and went all over. There's sparks going everywhere, and there's like fireworks display, explosion here, explosion there, going down the cliff, another explosion, bang, and smashing into rocks. And this went on for about 3 or 4 minutes. You know, just just 1 second of that would kill everybody on board. And then it finally came to rest. And everything went quiet. Well, no, I didn't see, but it was still. And then I knew it was going to happen. So when it happened, I burst out laughing. People thought I was crazy. You saw like a hand come up. It was the hero. And he pulled himself up. I think, was it Tom Cruise or something? I don't know. It was somebody like that anyway. And his hair was immaculate. Not a bead of sweat. Or a piece of soot on his head. Like he'd just come out of the shower, just come out of the... It was the most ridiculous thing you'd ever know. But I looked around, the people who had the headphones up. Oh, he survived. So, don't indulge in that sort of stuff. That you can do this straight in there. Because it's stupid, isn't it? And stop people watching this thing. Again, you know what's going to happen. They're always going to save the world. Every time they save the world. It would be really good if one day the world didn't get saved. And that would be a good movie. But anyhow, Actually, recently I went, no, sorry, I'm not going to keep going on. So, yeah, with a bit of restraint, it's okay. As long as you keep happy and peaceful. Because some people restrain themselves too much. They're too ascetic. They have no happiness. They have no depth in meditation either. Remember piti sukha, the joy of meditation, the joy of the heart, the joy of compassion, the joy of generosity, and the joy of being good people. Indulge in that. So have restraint, but don't have restraint when you're making donations. Don't have restraint when you're being kind. Be as kind as you possibly can. Don't be restrained in your compassion. Don't be restrained in your virtue. Other stuff, yeah, be restrained in. Any other questions which you'd like to ask? If you don't ask a question, it means you have to go working, cleaning up. Sorry? Is it taking it this morning or this afternoon? Yeah, this afternoon, yeah. I want to see everybody crying in the photo. The end of the retreat. I don't want to go home. There you go. Okay. So, there's another talk this afternoon at 2 o'clock or a bit of metta meditation. So, please enjoy the day. If you're clean up, don't just clean up your room. What did Bianca say? To clean up your room, clean up the toilet, clean up the bathroom. And don't forget to clean up between your ears. Clean up your mind. Get a little brush inside there and brush out all of the past bad karma. Brush out all of the fears and anxieties for the future. And then knock it out so you go away with a very clean and empty mind. Okay, off you go. Oh, sorry. Sadhu. 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 Very good.